John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer world. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-hosts, Steve and Randy. We got them back. Fellas, what do you hear? What do you say?
The man, the myth, the legend is back.
Randy, let everyone hear your voice, man.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. So, got back from a couple of medical things and, you know, had to be on 3 weeks of healing and doing well. So.
Well, you remember that last medical incident you had, you know, that put you out on Grimdark Live for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the Russian embassy let him go.
Well, exactly. You know, I'm just saying, let me ask you a question. How is this, the stunt midget, did this one make it out all right?
Yeah, we smuggled him out in the ambulance with us this time.
So. All right, good.
We didn't leave him behind, so.
Well, we had a hell of a time getting that boa constrictor off him, but
yeah. Squirmy little bastard, as I seem to recall, that's right. Well, Randy, welcome back, man. Welcome back. So Steve, what do we got, man? What are you going to be talking about?
Oh, good Lord. We've got CanCon. We've got the Lumineth Realm Lords. And we have a little bit to talk about them. And we're also going to be talking about the Wrath of the Everchosen.
Yeah, we're going to be getting into that. But folks, if you heard at the top of the show, we got the nicest guy in tabletop gaming back with us, man. Randy, what do you got, man? What are you going to be jawing on today?
I'm just going to do some commentary about, you know, some of the stuff coming out. And really excited about the 14 different lists. You know, I can finally play an all Demon of Chaos list again. That's like the mix of all four gods and some other cool rules coming out in the new campaign book.
Yeah. So. Yeah, a lot of good stuff that's going to be coming out. And you know what's funny? I kind of like where we're at right now. It's kind of a little bit of a lull before we really get into the craziness that I think is going to be happening towards the latter part of the spring and the summer when we get into all these armies breaking. And we're going to be getting into that. But we forgot to talk about, too, we're going to be also be talking about the Sons of Behemoth. We're going to be kind of going a little bit around and around on that. And Steve, I'm going to do this to you, buddy. I'm going to pull you back here a little bit on your Zeech list. We're going to revisit that a little bit coming off of the CanCon 2020 news. What do you think, huh?
Yeah, that might be appropriate.
I think so. I think it's going to be appropriate. But yeah, folks, we got Wrath of the Everchosen. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Lumineth Realm Lords and some of our impressions on that. And we got a good show ahead of us. We really do. So I'm excited about this one. And of course, the biggest news, Randy, the nicest guy in tabletop wargaming, man, he is back, folks. So that's going to make the show all the better for that. So, and as always, we have the question of the day and the closing thought before the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
We're rolling, guys. Let's keep your hands and feet in the Grimdark wagon at all times. We got a lot that we're going to be getting into, but we are going to jump in right now with the news. So let's start at the top here, man. The top of the iceberg. We got CanCon 2020. We got this thing that's going to be wrapping up, and there's a lot of AOS tournaments that happened this past weekend. I know that on last week's show we pretty much focused in on LVO. And we forgot about the biggest Age of Sigmar tournament on the planet, and that was CanCon 2020, which also wrapped up the same weekend. And CanCon 2020, as I said, is the largest Warhammer Age of Sigmar singles event in the world, I should have said. There was over 240 tickets sold and 228 lists submitted. This thing is really, I mean, guys, wouldn't you say this is the pride of Australia, man? I mean, this is big, news.
Oh, it is the pride of Australia in terms of Age of Sigmar, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just when I thought Margot Robbie was the pride of Australia, but I gotta
stop.
What are you talking about? I just brought that up, and maybe she throws dice once in a while.
Yeah. What is wrong with you? Keep going.
Maybe she shakes the dice for a few minutes before she throws them. Imagine that. Just picture that for a minute. Randy, you with me?
No, not anymore.
All right. So,
is anyone ever with you?
Never, never. So, what we found out coming off of this, this interesting, folks, I'm going to do this interesting little tie-in here with Steve. You know, our resident Zeech guy, who's not going to play Zeech, by the way, right? Wink, wink, nudge,
Did you
nudge. Say no more.
Actually, call me the resident Zeech guy.
Well, you know, but don't get me wrong, Steve.
I haven't insulted you.
You're not going to play him. Trust me, folks. Trust me. Listen to Steve when he tells you he's not going to play Zeech. Randy, you believe that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know, his willpower, he is going to hold fast. I got confidence in you, Steve, personally. I really do. I think you're going to do great.
I'm like a rock.
That's it. So somebody by the name of James Page with his Zeech change host won the entire tournament. And it was kind of funny. I think what I'd like to try to do here is I think I'm going to put the list up on well, I think I'll save that. I'll save that for when we get into it, Steve. How about that? I'm going to save that
sure,
when we actually talk about it. But did you guys, have you guys seen, probably you have, but have you guys seen the top 10 of
yes,
the CanCon stats?
Yes, I'm looking at the top 10 right now.
So let's go from 10. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, and it is almost exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Randy, have you seen it?
The armies that were up there.
I have not, but I've been hearing a lot about change hosts in a couple of the lists. So.
Yeah, so we're going to work backwards from the we're going to go to the top 10 here, folks, and we're going to go from 10th all the way back. And so here it is. So in 10th place, we had Fire Slayers with the Hermdar. No surprise there. Although I'm a little surprised they didn't do better than 10th, but hey, you know, sometimes
they did.
Okay, and then we got Iron Jaws in 9th place with the Iron Suns. Cities of Sigmar with Anvil Guard at 8th. 7th
to Justin there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. 7th was Cities of Sigmar, Hollowheart. 6th, Zeech, host of Duplicitous. That's what it was. And 5th, another Zeech list, Guild of the Summoners. 4th, Big Wah. 3rd, oh, here it is, Fire Slayers, Hermdar.
There's
again.
Your Fire Slayers.
2nd, Ossiarch, Bone Reapers, the Petrifex, obviously with Nagash. And number 1, Zeech, the Eternal Conflagration Change Host. There it is. I mean, Steve, you literally 2 weeks ago. Now, don't give it all away. But 2 weeks ago, you literally, give or take one character, and the endless spells. You called it, man. You had this list down before the book was even in most people's sweaty palms.
Yeah, I think that the great boy. You want to talk about the great trickster. The great trick of this book is that Zeech has always been looked at as a magic army with supporting shooting. And what Zeech is now, it's actually a shooting army with supporting magic. It's just the opposite of what it's always been. And it's not like I found this. It is the obvious meta of this book. And clearly, other people saw that too. Because this guy's list, who won, I mean, he's using the exact same thing. He's got the Eternal Conflagration, he's got the Change Host, and he just has a few different little units here and there that he switched around. But it's essentially the same list. It's a
right.
shooting list.
Right. And let's hold that, because I wanna come back around to this, because I wanna get a little bit more in depth into this 180 point Change Host list, because you nailed it. You nailed it before anybody even knew this thing was viable. And I find it interesting that you were able to do that, and then now, coming right off the cuff, CanCon 2020 has almost literally your list winning the whole thing. But, you know, going back to CanCon here, guys, you know, the top 20 is surprisingly diverse, you know, really looking at this thing. And, folks, you can go on to pretty much any
yeah, sure
you know, dice chucking nerd site out there, and you're going to be able to see the top 20 here. But it really is surprisingly diverse. Out of 18 Ossiarch Bone Reaper armies, Only two reach the top that I can see here.
Yes.
Only one Slaanesh army in the top 20, but three Cities of Sigmar armies, including Hermdar and Anvilgard.
That we and just Hammerhall.
And Hammerhall, yeah. So I really like how the top four, though, if you guys, you know, again, I'll read this off here for you, but I really like how the top four, there's one from each Grand Alliance. We got Zeech, Ossiarch Bone Reapers, Fire Slayers, and Big Wah. So there it
yes,
is.
Yes, you
top
literally
four.
Have.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have all four of the major factions being represented in the top four.
Right, right. And, you know, Steve, I don't want to push you into Zeech. I'm not doing that. I mean, even though I know you're not going to do that. You won't let anyone
push
you
into
Zeech.
No, I wouldn't do it. I would feel like a fish out of water, but it's easy to see what kind of a fish is on the pond.
That's right. But I want to bring this up to you, Steve. Yeah, nope. And actually, Randy, you know what, I'm doing this. I probably shouldn't, because Randy, the nicest guy in tabletop wargaming, you know, he's a false grot player himself. You know, he doesn't play the.
Wait, how many lists had grots in the top?
I'm going back to this real quick. You know, both these guys are, you know, they play those Mooney grots. You know, the Walmart version of the real.
No, we
grots.
Play the real grots.
But Steve and Randy, I want to point this out to you. I mean, oof, you know, yes. The Gits at 34. Yeesh. Randy, Steve, well, what are your thoughts on this debacle here? What happened?
It's not a debacle. It's exactly what we said that Gloomspite Gits was going to be. It's a solid six, solid seven army. It's never going to be anything more. It's never going to be anything less. If you are looking for an army that will always be consistently a seven in terms of its strength, go to Gloomspite Gits. It does not surprise me at all that there's only one Gits in the top 50. It doesn't surprise me at all.
No, and you know, I was kicking you in the shin there a little bit, and having a lot of fun doing it, by the way, and you too, Randy. But it realistically, if you look at it this way, guys, 34th out of 220 is still pretty freaking good, folks.
Exactly. I mean, you're the, you know, 34 out of 220 guys. Yeah, I'd be pretty satisfied if I was that.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah, and here's something pretty interesting, too. A Karadrin player finished 30th out of 220th. You know, that's still pretty good. I mean, the thing is, and here's what's interesting here. And I want to get your guys' perspective on this, because here's what's interesting about this Karadrin player that came in 30th out of 220th. As I said, that's still pretty good. But the thing is, yeah. The book only dropped recently and changed, by the way, the army works a lot. So Karadrins have some good, strong tools, a lot of mobility and ranged firepower that we've seen. So I'm actually really impressed by this piece of news right here, just to kind of cherry pick some stuff out of that list.
What's important to note is that CanCon allowed KO and Zeench, obviously, right, into this tournament. Whereas LVO, from what I understand, did not.
Yeah, you know, LVO did not. You're right. And so, LVO was pretty strict with their 2-week policy, which, you know, I gotta be honest with you. I mean, Randy backed me up on this. That's, you know, that's a pretty typical thing in the tournament world.
Yeah, there's always a buffer of like 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, the cutoff. So
interesting to note is that Slaanesh has just absolutely fallen face first out of the top 10. You don't even see Slaanesh on this list until number 19.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, a God
Seekers. God Seekers, right. Right. Yeah.
But my point is that look at the top 10 and tell me what you see happening. You see Fire Slayers, one order army. Then I see two cities. That's two order armies.
Right.
Then I see Fire Slayers again. That's four order armies.
Right.
And notice that the Fire Slayers, the Hermdar, which were virtually non-existent in other tournaments, just a few short months ago, all of a sudden now, people have discovered just how nasty they are, and they're starting to punch their way into the top 10.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is you know, we talked about this for a long time, because Steve, you were a Fire Slayers player when
oh yeah, I played Hermdar. That was my army.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, you know, and we've gone round and round about this, and I wonder, because we've talked about, you know, the price points, you know, because that was an expensive army to play. That's I mean, still, I would still have to say, you're going to drop some coin to play them little short little mean.
Oh
bastards.
Yes, you will. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, you will. Yeah, you're not playing Fire Slayers unless you're dropping a solid 1,000.
But I think what people are doing is they're looking at that and saying, okay, this is what's going to give me, you know, all the, you know, nerd dominance that I can ever imagine. So I think that's what they've done, because you're seeing a lot more of these Fire Slayer armies out there. And what I find interesting is here's GW again. They introduce Karadrin Overlords, and bang, everyone starts playing Fire Slayers. It's like,
yeah, it is kind of amusing.
Can KO get a freaking break?
Well, I mean, I still don't think they're a bad army, and you can take Fire Slayers with KO now, so I don't think they're a bad army. I just think that there's just not a lot of people, and we talked about this before, there's not a lot of people that are into that kind of steampunk aesthetic. They dwarves flying around in blimps is just not something that a dwarf player really sees as a role for dwarves in fantasy. It's just the way it is. Now, the Fire Slayers, you know, here they are. Like I said, what I took a particular note was that Fire Slayers were non-existent. No one played them. And as soon as those points were adjusted and the Hearthguard Berserkers were able to be now in units of 20, most guys now are taking those multi-units of Hermdar at 20, and the army is even worse than it was when they were 30-man units.
Yeah, 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 that's very, very true. Randy, what are your two cents in a tin can on this one?
Well, a couple of our, chat members wanted to chime in, and one person said there wasn't any Knoblars in the top 30 or 40.
Well, that's because there's classy people in the top 30.
You see, let me explain all this for you Cretans who don't understand, the
so they were a viable option for
no,
the...
No, I actually...
For them to be pulled into the ogre armor.
I actually was on the phone with the Prime Minister of Australia, and he begged and pleaded.
Didn't allow them through customs, are you saying? Because
they're
too good?
What they said was because the Knobblers had already saved Australia. They put the fires out, and they saved the entire country from sure just absolute obliteration. And he didn't want, you know, the Knobblers just taking over the entire country. So he asked me personally to keep them out of that tournament. So, you know, look, guys, I had to do it for the world. You know, you don't understand. You know, and neither do these sycophants that are on this, you know, that are here typing in. You know, they don't understand just what I did to save the world. You know, the Knobblers were ready to take over. They would have taken over the whole thing. And you guys can start thanking me any moment. That's really what it is.
See, what happens, folks, is he just talks, and Randy and I just sit back and wait for him to run out of steam. And then eventually it ends.
Nope, never gonna end. So let me tell you all about a story I once remember about my Knobblers. We're all sitting in
a
hot tub
cares.
Together.
Let's move on.
All right, so
we're back to the top 10.
So here it is. So here's what's funny, and let's do go back to this, because, you know, if you look at the list, the dominant. I mean, okay, you've got a good showing by Zeech. Really in the
absolutely.
Top 10. You know, they're showing, you know, three times. The Osiarch Bone Reapers, I gotta tell you, you know, they're hanging in there. You know, the Osiarchs. They showed up once in the top 10, but if you look, you know, they were then just right below that at 12.
Yeah,
so.
12. But here's another thing.
Okay.
Look at how much people have trash talked cities. Excuse me. I see two city armies in the top 10. Both of them damn good armies. Hollow Heart, that's the magic crazy army. And Anvil Guard, that's the Justin shoot everything that moves army. So,
yeah.
I mean, here we are listening to all the poo-pooing that we heard about cities, and they're in the top 10. And guys, they're not just in the top 10. Right below in number 11 spot is cities. So we're talking, you know, the army that everybody laughed at, and I'm not going to lie, we poo-pooed it a little bit too. And look at where they're placing in a top tournament, in a major tournament. They're in the top 10, and they're back-to-back 7 and 8.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying anything as far as that. But, I mean, you know, I got to tell you, this what we have here. I mean, even number 25th. Folks, we're gonna keep rolling on after this. But even if you go all the way down to 25th, and this is the part that we're gonna get into with our next piece of the news here. Slaves to Darkness with the Despoilers came in 25th. That was the highest that army made it. Now, here's what I'm gonna say on one hand, just like we just mentioned with the Gloomspite Gits. Here's Slaves to Darkness coming in with the Despoilers, obviously most likely with a Nurgle, keyword. Or Mark, Nurgle Mark, they came in 25th out of 220 players.
Yeah, it says they were the Despoilers.
Right. Well, the Despoilers is their damned legion.
Okay. That's what it says they were.
And I bet you there was a Mark or Nurgle. They don't have that anywhere else, but I bet you that's what that list was. Probably with a crap ton of Marauders and all that other kind of stuff. But which takes us into the Wrath of the Everchosen. Guys, we ready to keep rolling on, or do you have more
Let's
you want
go.
To talk about?
No, King I think Con? We've yeah. covered it, but I just wanted to say that I think this top 10 is very indicative of what we're going to be seeing in the tournaments that are coming up here in the next couple months. Unless something comes out before then that knocks everybody's socks off, you're pretty much looking at what Adepticon is going to look like.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So get ready for that. And by the way, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia did say I could bring my Nobblers to Adepticon. So get ready, you bastards.
The Prime Minister of Australia wouldn't even let you in the airspace.
I'm telling you, you know, we're close, man. We're close. We're fraternity brothers together. So, at any rate,
oh, for God's sakes.
So here it is, Wrath of the Everchosen. So the new book is out for pre-order this Saturday, and I kind of want to get your perspective on one thing here, guys. But in a minute, I kind of want to set this up, man. You got to set the stage for what we're going to be talking about. So. Here's what we know as far as the storyline. In the book, The Wrath of the Everchosen, and folks, you might have gone back, if you want to, you can go back and hear this from a couple of shows ago. We kind of introduced Wrath of the Everchosen when the idea of it and the concept of it first broke, and we knew that there was a book coming. But in this book, The Wrath of the Everchosen, it has a lot of great content that I would think that any fan of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, as well as, you know, rules and campaigns for Death and Chaos armies would absolutely love. I mean, you don't have much longer to wait to find out. I mean, as I said, this thing's going to come out 2 weeks from this Saturday, pre-order this Saturday. And if you're looking to play some siege battles and attack the narrative side things of this book, it looks like that they're going to have plenty of things in this book for you guys to build on. And there's going to be also 13 Chaos sub-factions with rules. You know, you can't forget those. And the rules, guys, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but we're going to have roaming monsters and wandering endless spells. Both of those are going to use some type of table to determine how the monster and spells react. What's a little unclear to me at this point, and probably to everyone else, is how these monsters and spells are going to be included into your games. Now, these rules will probably be for narrative or open play scenarios, so I don't think match play rules are going to be involved. Maybe, maybe not. But then again, you know, it would be interesting to see if GW created some way to spend points on these wandering creatures and spells for your games. I mean, think about this, guys. Come on. Imagine paying a discount or even getting, you know, paid points to include one of these random encounters in your army, you know, a monster or something like that in your army. Now, it's very unlikely, but to me, it sounds interesting, you know, from what we know about the Wrath of Everchosen at this point.
Yeah, it's a great mechanic. I love it.
So we know that the book right now is going to be about 104 pages, with around 50 of them that's going to give a little bit of a background and a lore. And there are some pretty interesting sections, from what I understand, in there as far as how they're going to be breaking the book up. So you mind if I give a little bit of a background from the story arc that we know right now in this thing?
Sure.
Yeah, go for it.
So here's what we do know. For any of you folks that don't know it, here it is. Old Uncle Grimdark is going to fill you guys in. So Arcann and Nagash have been on the inevitable collision course, you know, throughout the various Age of Sigmar mortal realms. Now, as we talked about in last week's or 2 weeks ago show, Wrath of Everchosen is going to tell the tale of these two deities, these two titanic forces of death and chaos, throwing everything they've got into a war to control the 8 points and the crucial arcway. They both need to complete in order to, or to hold in order to complete their plans. Arcann has been, you know, relatively speaking, somewhat missing during the recent times in the Warhammer Age of Sigmar storyline. But he's been obviously out there he's been busy, right? I guess that's the best way to put it. And in order to dominate the Eight Realms, he needs to unite the Dark Gods once and for all. That's been kind of his underlining story arc since he really came about, you know. And so what's interesting about this is that the Everchosen, which are his little horse guys, believes that he's discovered the location of Slaanesh. And what he's looking to do is he's looking to free the Prince of Pleasure when he receives a vision, I guess, the way that the story goes, from the Varen Spire in a flame. So Archaon has been somewhat missing, but we do know, like I said, he's been out there
hunting Slaanesh.
Yeah, exactly. So now it leads us to the forces of Nagash. You know, these things are, you know, his forces are efficient. They're, you know, the armies of the Everchosen are really just zealous. They're reckless. They're aggressive. And these armies are led by, I would have to say, two of the most impressive generals in the mortal realms that they've ever known. And I would have to say that, Katakros, the Mortarch of Necropolis, and Archaon of the Everchosen. And that's kind of, it's not necessarily, from what I understand here, guys, it's going to be, it's not necessarily going to be Nagash versus Archaon. It's going to be Katakros, more or less, versus Archaon. And you know Nagash is going to be stirring the pot in the background there somewhere. So those are going to be the two main enemies, catalysts against each other, if you will. So in addition to the ebb and flow of the war in the Wrath of the Everchosen, we also learn a lot more about the 8 points. From what I'm to understand, they're formerly called the All Points before the corrupting power of chaos changed it into a nightmare hellscape. So the action of the Wrath of the Everchosen takes place primarily in this land, and the book explores that into great detail. So, to me, guys, what do you guys think? I mean, I think the Wrath of the Everchosen, it sounds pretty freaking awesome. I'm actually pretty excited about this.
Well, what this is inevitably going to do is this large clash is going to attract the greenskins, orcs and goblins. Or as we now call them, you know, the Moon Clans and the Iron Jaws. Now, they're going to be attracted to this energy, to this fight. And what you're going to see is the same thing that you saw in the Storm of Chaos many, many years ago in 6th edition. Archaon's coming into the Empire. He's trying to destroy the Empire, and who comes in to thwart his plans? Of course, Grimgor Ironhide, the Greenskins. I think that is what you're going to see. This is not just going to be between chaos and death. It's going to draw in all of the other factions, because no one wants either one of those two armies to get a hold of the 8 points.
Yeah. So do you think they're kind of copying sixth edition here a little bit?
Well, no, I don't think they're copying sixth edition. I just think it's the natural course of any world, you know. No one faction wants another faction to get control of something like the 8 points. Archaon has it now, but he can't do anything with it until he unites the Chaos Gods. Nagash is depending upon his Leonidas, which is Katakros, to basically go in and slaughter Chaos and get him out of there so that they can control that point in the world. Well, that's gonna attract the Greenskins to come in. And Order is not just going to sit back and let this happen. So now Order's going to come in and interfere. So you're basically going to have one big giant battle royal at the 8 points.
I love it. I love it, man. Randy, what are your thoughts, dude?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the start of a narrative. So, like, this first book is just going to have mostly chaos in it. They did show the table contents. So it is all chaos lists. You know, not even the Bone Reapers like actually have a special list in there.
Okay,
so,
and you know they might build it like they did with Warcry. You know, they might start out with all chaos, and then from there they might build on.
Yeah, I think it's just a progression in the story, and they're gonna they're gonna release more more allegiance abilities and campaign books. I know further down now that like I said, they're almost wrapped up with all the actual main I mean, army books, you know. There's only very few left to actually, you know, hammer out again.
Yeah, they all got those white spines. I love it. But here's the thing. You know, for me, and then I want to hear your guys' take on one part of this Wrath of the Everchosen. But for Chaos players, I just want to say this before I kind of step back and really kind of listen to the wisdom here of Randy and Steve. But for Chaos players, guys, this book is a must buy. And if you're like me and really want to take a crack at those siege rules, here, I set this up for you here, guys. You'll probably want a copy or just be friends with a Chaos player who has the book. But siege battles are just one more way to experience the Age of Sigmar setting. And it's great to see GW exploring what I'd like to say are these non-traditional modes for the game. Now, the fact of the matter is, Randy, you do some of the best siege games ever. And Steve, you know, you're an old war horse. So what are your guys' thoughts on this part of the book that they're actually, that to me, they're bringing back what I loved about Warhammer Fantasy Battles, and that's the siege. Let's hear it.
Well, from what I could, what I've seen for rules wise, is it uses the siege rules that are in the main rules, but they're just adding what they call siege warfare allegiance abilities. So they're adding, you know, like for example, the one example they gave was Nurgle, and they take less damage on their starving rolls. You know, there's a whole chart that, you know, each player like basically rock, paper, scissors their choice and then reveals it, and then, you know, depending on the chart or whatever, like if you try to starve out your opponent or whatever, they take like mortal wounds per guy and stuff. And like the one example is that Nurgle, you know, being gluttonful, has eaten so much that, you know, they don't starve as fast. So that's like one of the cool rules that they kind of previewed in this so far. So,
okay. Steve, what do you got, man?
Well, going outside of the siege rules, I think that this is exactly what we talked about last week. I think this is the beginning of the end of the Soul Wars storyline. This is going to be like the first chapter. Then they're probably going to have another book somewhere down the road, maybe in the fall or even maybe, you know, early next year. But I think we're starting to see the end of the Soul Wars, and we're going to be moving into the next chapter. Now, my question is this going to be a campaign where people, much like Storm of Chaos many years ago, where people are sending in their battle results to the GW website, or they're going to GW stores that are going to like sponsor games? In other words, is this going to be a narrative that's going to be driven by the fans, by the gamers? Or is this just going to be something that GW is going to do no matter how our games go? I don't know. I'm hoping that it is a fan-driven narrative.
Yeah, that would be exciting. I mean, I would love to see that come into play, because I think that's one of the things that GW, one of the few things they did right back in the day, you know, when they had that, I guess they did that, right? I mean, they didn't really do a lot of advertising. They didn't really, you know, deal with the public or their fans. But what they did is they really got a lot of data from their players. And I think that helped shape a lot of things, especially with their campaign. So I would love if they did that with this here.
Well, you have to make people think that they're part of the world. One of the reasons that 6th edition and 7th and 8th edition were so popular and so involving is that people actually felt like they were actually taking part in driving the narrative. That's what made it so much fun. You know, I mean, I couldn't even tell you the amount of battles we had back in the day in 6th edition. What, like like the Storm of Chaos, and then we had the Nemesis Crown, then we had Lustria. And the beautiful part about it was the fans were driving it. The gamers were driving those narratives. That's what makes any campaign successful: ownership. People want to have ownership in what's going on in the world that they love and the world that they game in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, Randy, you're an old Siege guy. I mean, what are your two cents on this thing, other than the practical side of it, as far as the rules and all that kind of stuff? I mean, but your mind's got to be swimming as far as what you're going to be able to do with some of those, you know, those AOS APOC games that you usually throw out there with some Siege rules.
Oh yeah, there's, you know, I like to take stuff from all over, but you know, I just use models that don't exist anymore. But you know, one of the best parts of like the old campaigns was the submission of data of like who beat who, and you know, like they do have like battle plans that, you know, to go with the storyline or whatever, but you know, like if they did like a weekly thing, like everybody play the first battle plan called such and such, and you know, everybody report the results for this week, and then you know, having you know a 7-week campaign of replying all their results, you know, just to push and see who wins in the realms, you know.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Well, that's it. Wrath of Everchosen. That's going to be out in everyone's sweaty palms.
I mean,
2 weeks.
The bottom line is it's getting down to Nagash and Archaon. One's going to be a gangsta. The other's going to be a prankster. So we don't know who it's going to be, but we're going to find out real soon.
Yeah, I hope it's Nagash and Archaon, because I really don't think Katakross has a chance. I don't think he's got a, you know, candle and a gale force winds chance to take on Archaon.
Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, and then like the 14 different ways of, you know, like I said, like there's a way of playing all demons again, you know, for, you know, everybody who liked you, those old lists of like mixed, you know, mixing of the four gods, you know. And then there's a few War Squirrel battalions in there and some other fun stuff. So
yeah, it'll be a fun campaign.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, you know, the avenue that they're taking this book. I wonder if they're going to be doing this with other armies, or you know, are they going to have something where, you know, they've got two different armies fighting each other in a separate campaign book or a separate style book? I mean, this is kind of unique for GW, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great supplement. People are going to have a lot of fun with this. This is going to be a very enjoyable campaign. And what I love, the fact is that my army, the one I'll be playing in it, is not either of those factions. I'm coming in to be the spoiler.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I shouldn't have said necessarily unique, because, you know, Malign Portents was something that kind of drove towards that as well. I mean, we all kind of forget what Malign Portents did.
Yeah, interject. Not to digress into Malign Portents, but that was a campaign, in my opinion, that fell absolutely flat. I did not see a lot of emphasis for that campaign, and I think the reason for that is that there weren't enough books out yet at that point.
Yeah.
Now that we have more of the world kind of taking shape and more armies that have been released, I think Wrath of the Everchosen is going to be much more successful as a campaign.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, I tend to agree with you. I think had Malign Portents come out a year later, I think it would have been a surefire smash hit. I mean,
yes, I agree.
You know, the Blood Moon Rising campaign, the Well of Souls, which is Battle Plans. I love that they came from below. You know, there's some other ones that we've played. And you know, here's the thing: their characters are fantastic. I think the best out of all the characters that had to come out though was the Fungoid Cave Shaman. You know, he just absolutely changed the face of the game, at least for Destruction players. The Knight of Shrouds was pretty good too. And I forgot we got that the Chaos chick, the Dark Oath War Queen.
We got
her Malign Portents too, didn't we? Right,
the War Queen.
Yeah, she was all right, but
Fungoid, you know, Cave Shaman too.
But that's what I said. Yeah, the Fungoid Cave Shaman, I think, was the best part.
But the Ordinator also, like,
yeah,
that was there. You know,
yeah,
to shoot the War Machines better was fantastic.
Yeah, but then they nerfed him.
Yes, he did.
But I do love the whole storyline of Malign Portents. So I guess it's not necessarily unique of what they're doing now with Wrath of Everchosen, because they've kind of already done it with Malign Portents, but. But yeah, so folks, this Saturday you'll be able to pre-order Wrath of the Everchosen, and in the week after that, on the following Saturday, which is February 8th, it should be in your sweaty palms, man. So we'll see who wins this the Smackdown. Is it going to be death or chaos for the fight of the eight points? Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there.
But here we go, Steve. I'm gonna roll back on your Zeech list here a little bit.
Sure.
So, folks, if you guys listened to our show a couple of weeks ago, we had spoke about Zeech. We spoke about a particular 180-point battalion called the Change Host. And what this battalion was one Lord of Change, and eight in any combination of, you know, Hero or Horrors, Exalted Flamer, Horrors of Zeech, Flamers, you know, Screamers, or Burning Chariots. And what's interesting, and I'm going to let you go on this one here, Steve, but I just want everyone to understand why this is such a remarkable prediction that you made. So at the start of your hero phase, what you guys can do with this battalion is, as long as the Lord of Change is alive, you can redeploy two units anywhere more than 9 inches from enemy models. Very powerful mechanic.
It's beyond powerful. It is basically two free Hand of Gork.
Exactly. So now that unit can't move in the following movement phase, but this is where, Steve, your list here, and I'm going to let you talk on this, why it doesn't matter. And this can be, this list in itself, without what Steve did, which is in return what the guy that won CanCon did, this can be nasty all in itself. But if it's used the way Steve was going to, and the guy from CanCon, well, you'd win CanCon 2020, which is exactly what he did. But, you know, truthfully, Steve, I'm going to go back here. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put, you know, unfortunately, for you guys on the podcast that are going to be listening here a little bit later, you're not going to get the benefit to be able to see the list here. But I'm actually going to throw the list up here. But Steve, I'm going to do that here in a minute, because I kind of want to get your I want to hear what you have to say about the list here. Let's go back and kind of remind everyone what you did as far as your list.
So there was just something about that book when it first came out that I just wanted to pick it up and take a look at it, because I know that traditionally Zeench has always been a very powerful army. And I always said that if I was ever going to play a Chaos army, I mean, really play a Chaos army, it would probably be Zeench, just because I like the shooting that the Flamers had back before they could do what they do now. So it didn't take long for me to read through that book, and I immediately saw the meta of this army. And the meta of the army is not magic. If you're going the route of magic, you're making a big mistake. That's not the meta of this book. The meta of this book is shooting. And so what I did is I just put together an army of all Flamers and Exalted Flamers on Burning Chariots. So basically the army is a Lord of Change, a Change Caster, because you have to have one Horror Hero, three units of six Flamers, and then four Burning Chariots. Now, when you add up all the amount of shooting from all of those units, it's absolutely just beyond any level of disgusting that you can imagine. I told you, I dice hammered it, because with me, when I make a list up, I never want to just say, oh, okay, this looks great on paper, but I'm not going to dice it. No, I'm going to dice every single army
I'm going to put up James Page's list right now from CanCon. Now, folks, this is the guy that won CanCon 2020. He was number one out of 220 competitors, the largest Age of Sigmar tournament on the planet. So here it is right here. So here it is. This is his list. Lord of Change, Fate Master, Gaunt Summoner on a Disc of Zeech, Blue Scribes, Fate Caster, Herald of Zeech, Changeling, 10 Pink Horrors, 3 Flamers of Zeech, 3 Flamers of Zeech, 10 Brimstone Horrors of Zeech, and 10 Brimstone Horrors of Zeech. Obviously the Change Host, but he ran some endless spells. But what I find interesting about this, and Steve, talk a little bit more to this. I mean, he ran your list
to my knowledge, what, minus one character and some endless spells. And you didn't have any pink horrors.
No, yeah. He had horrors in his list. The difference is my list is predominantly shooting. And he's using the same faction, Eternal Conflagration. He's using the same battalion, obviously, Change Host. He decided to go with a little combination of both magic and shooting. My army was virtually the same thing. It was just I decided to just primarily focus on shooting and have the magic supporting. But essentially, he's doing the same damn thing. He's got his flamers. He's got his shooting. The strength of this army is going to be its shooting. And as I was saying, when I was dice hammering this army out, and I was dice hammering it out against a Idenith Deepkin army, I wiped out two units of six heals in one round of shooting. I mean, just gone, off the table. So now, to that player that says, well, you know, objectives, objectives, objectives. I've said this a million times. You're not holding an objective if you're not on the table to hold it. Okay, I'm going to shoot you right off the damn table. You know, go ahead and charge the front line. You're going to kill what? Six flamers? And then I'm going to open up and I'm going to shoot you to death. It's not like any, you know, thing that I found. Like I said, it's the obvious meta of this book. The shooting is out of control powerful. And when those burning chariots shoot, you're not being shot at by a flamer. You're being shot at by an exalted flamer, which means rend of two and D6 damage. It's mind-boggling to think the amount of damage you can put from this army on your opponent. And like I said, all you have to do is turn one, because you're a one-drop army.
Right.
They're not going to out-deploy you.
Right.
You're a one-drop army. Turn one, you're going first. So if I have to take out a powerful character on turn one, I'm taking two units of six flamers, and I'm going to zap them over where I'm within 18 inches, and I'm going to kill that character in the first turn.
Yeah, because you can, as long as your Lord of Change is alive, you can redeploy two units anywhere. Correct. More than nine inches of any models, and it doesn't matter because you're shooting.
Yes. Like I said, it's this Tzeentch army is disgusting beyond anything that I've ever created in terms of shooting. And like I said, when you're wiping out two units of eels in the first turn, what is your opponent going to do? If you're playing your average Idenith player, they're going to have three units of six eels. And then they're going to have either, you know, Nemardis or characters or whatever. You wipe out their two of their best units on turn one. They've got one unit left to do something with. And they're just going to get shot down anyways. Not to mention the Lord of Change is no chump in combat. He can get in there and mix stuff.
Yeah. No, I think he's underlooked a lot of times because he looks like Buzz Buzzard, you know.
Basically the guy who played this, the guy who won CanCon had a different army, definitely. But he's playing the same thing. He's playing the Eternal Conflagration because he saw that in the meta because of the Rend. And he's playing the Change Host because obviously you get to bounce your units all over the table. He saw that, and anyone who read that book saw that as well. At least if they wanted to be able to take out the enemy at a distance.
Yeah. So what would you say would be a good counter to Tzeentch?
Fire Slayers, because they have a 4+ ward save, and the shooting will be just barbaric that first turn, and you better have something that can stop it. Like, my trolls would be okay with the 5+ ward save. Fire Slayers would do great. Anything with the ward save is going to do okay. It just depends on what you're getting slammed with. Like the level of how much you're getting slammed. Because not every Tzeentch Change Host player is going to play as much shooting as I have in that particular list. But they're going to have it. And when it does come, you better be ready for it because it's going to be devastating.
Yeah, and I find it interesting because I know that when we first talked about Tzeentch a couple of weeks ago, you know, I was referring back to the Adepticon 17 where the Tzeentch player won basically just by having, you know, pink horrors splitting into blue horrors, splitting into brimstone horrors, and basically sitting on a... and, you know, it's funny is how here's Tzeentch back again with a completely different list build winning these tournaments. And it's funny.
Did you see why that guy took the Eternal Conflagration?
No. Why? No, fill us in.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
If you look at his list, what does he have on his list? Read his list again.
Okay, starting from the top.
Now, I'm talking just not characters. Read his troops.
Okay, he's got 10 pink horrors of Zeech, one unit. He's correct. Got 2 units of 3 flamers of Zeech. He's got 2 units of 10 brimstone horrors of Zeech.
The flamers of Zeech are battle line in the Eternal Conflagration. That's the reason he took those flamers.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. All right.
Because now he can take the pink horrors, throw them in the list, and he gets his splitting, but he's already got his battle line covered because you cannot take them. If you're going to do the again and again splits, you can't count them as battle line. So what he did is he took his 2 eternal, or excuse me, he took his 2 flamer units, used those as his battle line, and then he went and took 2 units of the pink horrors, which could do the split again, again, and again. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was using the flamers as his battle line to be able to throw in those pink horrors.
Okay.
Which was smart. I mean, obviously it was smart. It worked.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I it's funny. The Eternal Conflagration. I mean, you know, I'm here looking at my book right now. I mean, you're also going to be improving the Ren characteristics of friendly Eternal Conflagration units. So that doesn't suck. That's going to help you out quite a bit too.
Well, that's the reason why you take the Eternal Conflagration,
right?
Not just because it makes flamers battle line. It's due to the fact that they get rend.
Oh, I see. Right.
And the rend is just, and the rend on their shooting is everything. I mean, that's what they're there for.
Right.
And
well,
2 units of flamers are, I mean, 2 units of flamers alone is enough to just wipe out anything.
Well, what's interesting about it is the characters, I think, are awfully, you know, let's go back to the Screamers of Zeech, because, you know, that, you know, he's got the flamers that are in there now. So those things, what is their, I'm grabbing my book here again here, folks. What is their movement? Do you know that off the top of your head?
The Screamers?
Yeah.
It's anywhere between 12 to 14. They move pretty quick.
Yeah, so this army is pretty much hitting on all cylinders. I mean,
you've got... the whole army flies.
You've got shooting, rend,
if you're playing the
movement.
Stuff, yeah, everything flies.
Yeah.
My army, the army that I built, everything in the army flies, except for the change caster.
So looking at this list right here, looking at what James Page, and I'm not knocking it at all. I mean, the guy won CanCon. But looking at this list right here, walk down, what would you change in this list? What would be the Steve Grant guarantee as far as a great Zeech list?
Nothing. He just put together his own version of Change Host. I wouldn't change anything, because when you build an army, you've got to build the army that works for you. I don't know this person. I don't know how they like to play. I don't know if they if they like to get in and mix it up. I don't know. I don't know what their tactic and their style of play is. I am just going back to my, you know, nasty Skaven roots, where I want to be able to shoot you and I don't want to suffer the consequence for it.
Yeah.
So that's why I went with an entire shooting army.
Well, I mean, the Flamers of Zeech, you know, here's what's pretty interesting about these little buggers. They move 9 inches, but they have an 18-inch range on their shooting attacks. 3 attacks, 4x3s. But giving them, normally they don't have a rend. Now they're going to have that -1 rend.
Now they have rend.
Now they have rend.
And the
Exalteds
have rend of 2.
Well, they would have it. They would have rend of 2 now, because they normally have rend of -1.
That's what I meant. In other words, once you give them the Eternal Conflagration, now their rend is 2.
Right. Right.
So now you've got, now hold on. You've got all of those chariots that I had in my army, those burning chariots, firing with Exalted Flamers, and they're doing all that extra damage at a rend of 2.
Right.
So you're basically just taking like an army of bolt throwers, basically.
That's very, very true. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's easy to see why this... So you say Fire Slayers would be the good counter to this
Fire Slayers are the counter for this army. Fire Slayers are the army that you would... Because what Fire Slayers can do, okay, go ahead, do your thing, you know, go ahead and shoot me, you know, do your thing. And then the Fire Slayers can say, well, I'm just going to pop up a unit of Hearthguard Berserkers 9 inches away from you, and I'm going to charge you with my character. And if I fail the charge, I can reroll it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the character is there to give them the reroll. So if the Hearthguard Berserkers connect with that front line, it's lights out.
Right.
Because Tzeentch has nothing. They have a 5-up save, and that's it. They don't have a ward save.
That's true. That's true.
So they're dead. If anybody gets, that's the Achilles heel. If anybody does get to you, you're dead.
Yeah.
They'll cut through you like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got to get there. That's a lot of shooting.
You've got to be able to live long enough to get there. That's the whole thing.
Randy, what are your thoughts, man? What's a good counter to this army or any Tzeentch army for that matter?
Yeah, it's all about like either having a special save or area denial. So like hordes of really cheap stuff, but then you know they have to shoot at all the like it'd be like a bunch of you know what maybe Skaven with like hordes of you know clan rats you know bubbling out their war machines and then making them like deep strike in front of you.
That's not what I was hoping you would say. So what you really wanted to say was Nobblers would dominate Tzeentch, no problem.
Actually, you'd do very well against Tzeentch.
Yeah.
So like another thing to note is that the Gaunt Summoner also gives you a free unit of 10 pink horrors.
That's true. Holy cow.
So if you look at it, it's 200. Like so, you know, 200 points. He's basically 60 points.
Now the Gaunt Summoner, he can only do that once per game though, right?
Once per game, you get a free 200-point unit.
Yeah. Great.
You know, and then that unit will split down to blues and the other stuff. And another thing is when the Emerald Life Swarm grows back your pink horse, it doesn't take the blue horse off the table that split. So you're getting D3 pink horse back a turn that keep on splitting.
Yeah. And don't forget if you take full reality. You get your flamers back if they get killed because you can bring back demons now with full reality.
Yeah. So there's,
It's disgusting on so many levels. Like I said, he just played a different variation of the change host, but any eternal conflagration with the change host.
Right.
And I don't care what you're playing, whatever variation of it you want, you are going to be a top level player.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because there's so many little subparts to the Eternal Conflagration. can't talk. That make this thing just even more sinister. Like they've got something here, Shroud of Warp Flame, where you roll a dice each time you allocate a wound or mortal wound inflicted by melee weapon on the bearer. On a 3+, the attacking unit suffers one mortal wound. A lot of stuff that's in this host, I guess, that makes it pretty sinister.
I just heard from one of our listeners that this exact same list, this change host, Eternal Conflagration, won the grand tournament in England as well.
Interesting.
So we definitely
but not the same guy, right? Not James Page.
No, of course not. But what if this is true, then we have our new meta. We have our new meta chaser army.
I gotta tell you, thank God it's not death. I'm done.
So sick of death. I mean, and I love death. I love the vampires, but I am so sick of death dominating tournaments because it does not take any skill to put it's just a kid with his daddy's gun. We put Nagash on the table and we just slaughter everything, you know, out there. It's like, oh God, I'm so sick of that.
Right. Yeah,
it's boring.
I couldn't agree more. But how about this? So folks, there you have it. I mean, there's our coverage on Tzeentch, and kind of wanted to get Steve out there to kind of brag a little bit about the list that he talked about before really anybody knew what the hell Tzeentch was. I mean, you know, Steve, I got to tip my hat to you, man. You called it. You called this list.
Well, it's like
almost
I said,
3 weeks ago.
It's not even me. It's just anyone who picked up that book saw that it's change host. And it's the Eternal Conflagration. It is the obvious meta of the book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it works. I mean, you know, the
it
thing
sure
is,
does.
Yeah. So let's keep it rolling. I mean, we got a little bit to still go over here that I'd like to kind of touch on with the Sons of Behemoth. I mean, I know, folks, we've kind of talked about this past couple of shows, kind of in anticipation of what these big dummies are going to be coming off the you know, the boards recently and off the rumor mill, if you will, to see the, you know, what kind of army this may be. And if you want to listen to what our coverage was on the earlier topics of these giants, we have talked about them in what, past three shows, I'd have to say, Steve.
One or two at least.
Yeah. So to kind of bring everyone up to speed here, you know, if you missed the rumor thread, you know, Sons of Behemoth War Scroll cards have been popping up and talked about on a shipping manifest via China. I believe it was either Hong Kong or Beijing. Really the same way the Ogre Maw Pot and a few other items leaked, you know, a while back. And here's a couple of things I want to speculate on. So that's what I think we're going to do here, right, folks? We're going to, you know, Steve, Randy, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about the Sons of Behemoth. We're going to speculate a little bit about what this army is going to be. Now, me personally, I'd love to see these bastards with shields. I mean, if we do that, could you imagine having a 3+ save Gargant, maybe? I mean, huh.
Like I said, if they come out and they have new models, if it's a new model army,
not the Uncle Lester.
I think it's going to be this. But if they come out with an army with new models, it is going to be one of the most popular armies you'll ever see on the table. Everyone is going to be playing them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for a couple of reasons. I mean, if they go full Imperial Knights, you know, a 2K army with say 4 to 6 models, you know, people are going to be drawn to that just because of the novelty of having 6 freaking models on the table. It's one of the reasons why I love my Stonehorn list.
I'll be playing them. I guarantee it. If they look cool and the rules are fun and they're destruction, I'm all over it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Randy, what do you think, man? These big dummies running around on the table. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's going to be fantastic. Like I'm really hoping for probably like 2 new kits. One being a character with 2 different like modes, probably a special character and a normal, and then having maybe a second kit being like an armored version, and then like a attacking version, and then the basic giant as their battle line. You know,
that's a damn good prediction, Randy. I'll bet you that is going to be pretty close to what we're going to get.
Randy, say that one more time, man. That was pretty damn good. I'm
thinking one kit is going to be a dual kit for a character, and it's going to be like either a special character and a normal like giant, or like a wizard. And then slash fighter, and then like the second kit being armored, shield bash, big guy, and then the other half of the box would be like some type of big club wielding, battering ram,
Could you imagine a wizard giant?
I love it.
That is freaking awesome.
Well, he could be like a druid, if we're going along the lines that this army is from the woods. I don't see why a giant wouldn't have like a druid kind of wizard in their army.
So yeah, like I said, like, me being, the collector of all things, you guys remember the old Dogs of War unit where two giants of Albion with a druid caster supporting them, I could totally see that, because they are from the, the woods. So
do you think we're gonna see a Seraphon versus Giants box set, maybe?
Oh, I pray.
Ogres, OCR, Foam Reaper time kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, would that be phenomenal? And just think, that would be a viable... All right, let's speculate for a moment here. Because Randy said something more profound, I think, than he probably even understands. Think about this. If that is the case, what you just said, Randy, where you said that there's going to be a character box and a fighter box, right? Like a troop box, if you will.
Yeah, and then the old giant is Battle Lion.
Very easy for them to come out with a box set with a special character in it, right? And then the only other thing you would have to buy for your giant army would be these 2 other box sets. So they could easily do a 2-book release, because Lizardmen aren't getting anything except the temple, maybe some dice, and the War Scroll cards in the book.
Yeah, and if they are in a box set, it'd be like the one special character for Lizardmen, the one new model.
But just think about that though, Randy. What you said is pretty important, because if that's going to be the case, and I think you're damn close, if that's going to be the case, then they could easily do the Sons of Behemoth release next to or alongside of the Seraphon release. It would make perfect sense.
That would be
the Suns of Beaman are not going to need a lot of troops. They're not going to need a lot of kits.
No, if we're saying 4 to 6 models on the table, maybe 6 models on the table for a 2,000 point game.
Exactly.
And you know what I hope they do? I'm going to speculate here. I want to play along. I hope they give them some like real cool grabby shenanigans where, you know, almost like where the Dankold Trogoth can like squeeze.
Oh
heads.
Yes, they should definitely have sling rules, like where they pick up something and kill it outright.
Could you could you imagine how good this would be against Mortek Guard?
Oh God. But yeah, I want to
stuff them all in a bag.
I want to see multi wounds
down
sling.
Their pants.
I want to see them be able to take the club and maybe have a special attack where they just slay like D6 troops outright.
Well, Imperial Knights, if they have a Reaper Chainsword, they have a what's that attack, Randy, where they can kind of sweep across a unit, or they can almost like reach inside of a building and sweep. You know,
yeah, they have a sweeping attack. But then also, there's some, you know, Sigmar models that have like, remember, like they can attack per guy within 2 inches. You know, like I can't remember what the weapon's called, but
yeah, you know, that's true. I hope they do dial down the drunken falling over thing, though.
I tell you what, if they have that aesthetic in the army or that mechanic in the army, it's going to be god awful. They've got to get away from that stupid rule. That's the reason why no one plays giants. They're unreliable. You cannot trust them in combat. Every time they move, they're falling over, and they're useless. And all they do is hurt your own troops half the damn time. So, I'm telling you, Randy, you mark my words, what you said about those Sons of Behemoth, I'll bet you that's going to be max a 2 to 3 box release.
Yeah.
I agree. That is
what
really
I think is great
profound.
is Randy comes back to the show and completely eclipses our 3 past shows of speculation on the Sons of Behemoth.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I'll bet you he's closer than he knows.
Way to go, Randy. Good stuff, man. But, you know, I wonder if they're going to be, now let's look on the practical side of the game. I wonder if they're going to be fast like Stonehorns. I mean, I'm thinking here to like,
if they're
going to be 4 to 6 models on the table, just like a Stonehorn.
They'll be 10-inch movement.
Okay, now here's the other thing. What about pile-in? Do you think they're going to get like maybe a 6-inch pile-in?
Well, the Bone Grinder has, you know, extended pile-ins and stuff. So
Their pile-in would be easily 6 inches.
Yeah.
So you think that they would get a 6-inch pile-in, and do you think they would be as fast as the Stonehorn?
Yes. They're gonna go 10 inches minimum.
Yeah, the Bone Grinder's already at 12, I think.
Lord, that would be just hysterical. Yeah. Could you imagine being in the battlefield and seeing, you know, 5 or 6 giants just running
you
down?
You know what, guys? I want giants to be feared again. I want someone to see someone put a giant. Randy, you've been in this game long enough, as long as I have.
Yeah.
Do you remember back in the day when you saw an Orc and Goblin player with 2 giants?
Yeah,
you
Oh, yeah.
Because they could just put out a hurt on your army, the likes of which you've never seen.
Oh, yeah. And
especially
then, like,
with that jump up and down crap.
Yeah, and I was actually really impressed with the Bone Grinder rules from Forge World.
Yeah.
Like, that's what a giant should be, you know.
Yes.
The extra swipe and the, you know, like, even though I played, you know, Monsters of Destruction with some just random ones or whatever, and I was always looking at them like, why can't this, you know, be like, counts as a character, you know, allows, you know, giants to be, you know, battle line or whatever, but they never did. But then, and I think they had it in plans, because, you know, we've been talking about this for ages, you know, it'd be, you know, that'd be awesome for their own faction. And I'm glad to see the leaks and that they're actually coming, and just waiting to see what they are.
Well, if you remember the one rumor mill pick, there's one rumor mill pick that looks like the giant end of a hammer with spikes coming off the bottom of it.
Yeah.
It looks like a big giant hammer,
right?
Like the head of a hammer.
Right.
I'll bet you that's for them.
Oh yeah, well, and then the giant gut plate that
that without a doubt.
Well, I thought it would be a shield. I thought that would definitely be a shield.
It is a shield.
Yeah,
that's what I think it is.
Well, let's go back now. Since you brought up that club or that battering ram, I wouldn't be surprised if they were again the giants. If they were for the destruction faction. But I'm saying that not only because of the recent rumor mills, but due to the lore behind Behemoth's death. So, are you guys familiar with that?
Yes, they're going to be destruction. I would probably bet that they're going to be on the destruction list.
Yeah, but are you guys familiar with that, with Behemoth's
yes.
death?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me kind of pontificate here for a second, and let people know. So his death, Bahamut was a god beast, and he was killed by Scabrous Sprawl, I believe it was. And Bahamut had a father called Yamong, I think, or Yamog, I believe it was, who was killed by Sigmar in the Age of Myth. So Bahamut was basically killed by Sigmar to prevent Archaon from corrupting and turning him into a chaos fiend. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of hate towards both order and chaos, like some war scrolls get to do X or Y depending on the faction they're fighting. So I would be interested to see, but I think I brought this up, Steve, as you and I talked about in the past, what would this be, their own faction? Would it be the Sky Titans? Would they be Order? The more I think about this, and the more I think about the lore a little bit deeper and the things that we're all talking about right here, my prediction is this is going to be a destruction-based army.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know that as far as Bahamut is concerned, because, you know, you say the Sons of Hu, I know
about it. We only have three destruction factions.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Now I am betting that we are going to get a Git Mob. They're coming. Those Wolf Riders.
You think they're going to be back? Okay.
Yes.
Good.
I think they're absolutely coming. I just think that they're a ways off. They're probably not until either late this year or maybe next year.
Okay.
No, okay. But I think we're getting goblins again. Regular goblins, like Wolf Rider goblins. Yes, I think they're coming.
Okay. Good. Good. Now, the other thing, I'm going to go back here a little bit in older lore. And Randy, you know, you kind of being an older lore nerd like myself, you might know this too. But there's a backstory here of interest. And I'm not going to get into all the details because I'm going off some memory here. But I hope they include the Femurs. Like, you know, like great builders and masons of destruction. You know, they were slaved by the Order, and then after Archaon liberated them, they became the Femuroid in the Chaos Army. Now, you guys remember when Femurs were Chaos, now all of a sudden they're destruction. Well, that kind of feeds into some of the backstories here. So I'm wondering if these giants aren't going to get like a smaller supporting type of units, if you will.
Yeah,
because I can't imagine giants going it alone unless they're a, you know, mercenary force. But
you may find, and we talked about this. This was something else we talked about on the show. You're going to start seeing that unit strength thing come back. The thing that the ogres have, where one ogre equals four models or something like that.
Well, they're doing it now with the Stonehorns,
yes,
and the Thunder Tusks.
You're going to see that with the giants. Giants are going to equal like 30 wounds or something like that.
How do you feel about that?
Like equal 30 troops or something.
How do you feel about that?
I love it. It makes sense. Stand a giant on an objective and tell 30 guys to go after him.
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That giant's going to hold his ground, and he's going to sweep that club, and he's going to beat them to death. That giant's going to hold his own. In other words, no one's coming and taking that objective from him.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to have like a lesser giant race maybe, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
don't know.
Almost like something a little bigger than ogres, you know, because think about it. They already have that now at the Minotaurs, or the Bulgors, I guess they're now. So
if they play their cards right, this will be one of the most popular armies that they've ever released. If they go the route of the Uncle Fester giant, it's over. It's done. The army will flop from the outset.
Yeah, you're referring to the current model sculpt with the beer belly and receding hairline.
It'll be over before it begins. So I'm praying that they don't go that route.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to see.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show.
Next topic, and that's the High Elves, man. We, in last week's show, we had anticipated the announcement at LVO, and of course, being 2 hours ahead of schedule, or ahead of LVO on who was on West Coast time, we didn't get it till after we were off the air. But we do know now that the Lumineth Realm Lords are here, and I kind of wanted to, if I can, kind of give my two cents in a tin can, my first impressions on this army of what we know, right, Steve? That's probably the best way to put it, Randy, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So for starters, here I go, and I guess folks for out there listening, maybe there's some of the guys or folks out there, guys, girls, whoever that don't know me, I my first army in the hobby was High Elves, so I have a kind of a strange attachment to them, even though I've played my Beastie Boys a ton more, and I've always kind of looked at that Tolkien type of elf with a lot of reverence. And so for starters, the Lumineth Realm Lords, you know, bit of a goofy name, but certainly beats the hell out of pointy elves, I guess, right? So, I mean, there you have that. And, you know, forgive me as I don't specifically know all the new names for the units here, but I'm going to give you my first impressions from what I know and from what is known about the new Lumineth Realm Lords. So here goes. You know, the proper elves here, guys, that are residing in the realm of Heish and led by Teclis, with a heavy Greek aesthetic, and when I'm looking at these things, you guys see the same thing too, the heavy Greek aesthetic in the new model look, and the return of, as I said it on the last show, one of my favorite, if not my favorite, High Elf character due to his backstory, Eltharion. He's now back in the mix of things. So where to begin with my little breakdown here? Probably to start with Teclis, right? I mean, this one is a pretty big change. And that's mostly the new Magical Beast Edition thing. Randy, Steve, you guys know what I'm talking about, where I'm going with this, right?
Yes.
Yep. So Teclis himself looks a lot like his old self, staff, sword, you know, even a similar pose. But Teclis is an interesting model, and this is where I want to go with this. I think he's a lot more elegant than the usual large-scale AOS ham-fisted sculpt that we had for a while. But what puzzles me is, what puzzles me a little is why he's not two kits. The big Sphinx creature, and he seemed to be just out of sorts, kind of hanging out together, when they could have served individually as different kits. I'm not exactly sure why he appears to be molded to the Sphinx's wing. I don't get that.
It is an odd looking model.
Yes. And moving down the line to the next character that we know of is Eltharion. I like to call him still Eltharion the Grim, because that was his original name in Warhammer Fantasy Battles. This one hurt a little bit. I mean, this is an interesting story. You know, he started out as a character on a griffin named Stormwing. Later on, in the defense of Anlik, he was captured by the Witch King Malekith. After being tortured and blinded by the cruel Dark Elf leader, he was returned back to the High Elves. He was then trained by the legendary Swordmasters of Hoeth and subsequently got a new model. During the End Times, he was killed by Archon the Black, stabbed through the heart. And that's the only... that only really partially explains this new... appearance as a suit of armor. I think the gimmicked Eltharion's thing is a clever piece of sculpting, don't get me wrong, but he looks a bit too much like Omega from the classic Doctor Who story, the three doctors, for me to really take seriously. And I'm a little bitter, because he was my favorite High Elf character.
But as I said in the last show, before this army was officially announced at LVO, Eltharion was one of my favorite characters in the High Elf line, back Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And now to make him a ghost or an avatar or whatever the heck
he
is.
Yeah, he's more of an avatar.
Yeah.
Like a spirit form of Eltharion.
Yeah. Yeah. All I know is he ain't on no damn Griffin anymore, and that's disappointing.
Interesting, because I thought that was the best model out of the whole bunch.
Well, it's neat, but could we call them something else, like Carl or something? I mean, did we have to? Anyway, that's just me going off the deep end here. You know, the army overall.
Carl, really?
Yeah. Well,
an elf named Carl.
Why not? Randy, you like the name Carl for an elf, don't you?
El Caro? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
El Caro.
He's a Spanish guy. So the army overall, it's got an interesting design aesthetic. Don't get me wrong. Their battle line reminds me of Greek Hippolytes, really. I mean, they do. I still like their old high elf kits from the past. They had a really nice range of miniatures for the time. And they certainly nailed the fantasy elf look, like I said before, the Tolkien elves. I think GW has gotten away from that Tolkien-type look for various reasons. So now to the units here, guys. And I want to get your two cents when I'm done kind of – when I jump off my soapbox here. But I like the spearmen. I guess they're called the Venari Wardens. The Dawn Riders, this is their cavalry unit. By and large, I do like them. And although the cavalry champion's hat is a bit silly, I guess that's easily fixed with some putty and working that out. I believe the concept art included some mounted archers. I think I saw that somewhere in one of the pictures. So I would imagine there's going to be an alternate build for that unit. As far as the Venari Wardens, the Spear Elves, they make me think of the old High Elf Spearmen. The Warhammer Fantasy Battle Spear Elves as a unit was also iconic for their martial prowess. You know, High Elf Spearmen were the solid core of the High Elf army. Combined with archers, you know, you had a pretty killer combo. Believe me, I played them. I think they somewhat kept the spirit of the classic High Elf range while also bringing something new to the table. I'm going to give them that. Regarding the Spear Elves, I want to say. But as far as the cavalry, the High Elves had some iconic cavalry, man. I mean, options with the Silver Helms, the Dragon Princes, and both of those units rode horseback, while the new models do look close. I'm trying to be polite here, to the Silver Helms in terms of armor. We're mentioning the Dragon Princes because Dragon Princes because of the amount of connections that really should be there. Hopefully they come out the Tyrion army. But overall, these look like absolutely gorgeous models. The cavalry part does. I really love those. It's going to be great to see some epic cavalry charges on the tabletop with these guys, even if I'm not playing them. But yeah, so that's kind of my quick 2 cents in a tin can on my first impressions of what I know with the new Realm Lords, the new Lumineth Realm Lords. Out of line, what did you guys think about what I said?
Okay. I agree with you. I find Teclis's model a bit odd. It's not for me. Then again, High Elves aren't for me, so that's easy to see. I love the Eltharion model. I really do. I think that's a great concept to have him there as an avatar, like a spirit. Basically, it was sort of like the avatars of Mathlin that you have in the Idnith Deepkin army. Spearmen and the cavalry just seem to be your basic high elves. Here's the thing. Everyone screamed and moaned and complained that they wanted high elves. Well, guess what, folks? You got high elves. And now people are like, well, wait a minute. I just I'm the dog chasing the car. I caught it, and I don't know what to do with it. You got exactly what you asked for. You got high elves. And GW, as far as what I've seen so far, has done a damn fine job of it. So let's wait and see what other models come out for the line. I know there's more coming. And I guess I won't formulate my opinion on the army one way or the other until I see the entire product line and I read the book.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And that's probably a much more level-headed way to look at it. I mean, Randy, what do you think about what I just said?
Oh yeah, I, I also have a high elf army, and it was a couple of my friends' first ones, and you know, I always like the look on the battlefield, and you know, they just, it's just a different aesthetic, you know, slightly, just, you know, as you said, you know, Greek. And I think the line is fine, and if people like the old look of their models, like I said, there are players playing Tomb Kings as, you know, Bone Reapers. Like, I've seen a couple of, you know,
right,
conversions and stuff. I'm like, if you really want the old models, you know, there'll be stand-ins with a few models. I do agree that, you know, Teclis should have been on a separate base and, you know, have rules as long as he's within 3 inches of the Griffin or whatever, but, you know. We'll see how it is.
It seems a little weird, but let's do this while we got a few minutes here. I want to go back and I want to speculate just like we do with the Giants. The Spear Elves, the Venari Wardens, you know, like you just reminded me of something you just said there, Steve. I mean, they sound like the other Venari units, you know, similar to the Namardi Reavers and the Thralls. And I'm wondering, you got me thinking of this now, I'm wondering if there's going to be a different sculpts with these models. Either you can make them with spears or swords or something. You know, I would think that the spears, you know, might have another build option with swords, possibly.
People, it's like I just got done saying, people wanted high elves. This is what people said they wanted. And GW gave you high elves. You're going to get the same kinds of box sets where you're going to have spearmen or bowmen. You know, you'll be able to pick and choose. You're probably going to get a box set of sword masters. And I'm praying to God they bring back the white lions.
Yeah, right.
I think this army has real potential in terms of its popularity. If we get the rule book and the rules are even halfway decent, you're going to see this army in every single top 20.
Right. All right, I'll make a deal with you. You play Zeech, I'll play this one.
Not a chance in all hell.
Right. No,
I'll play Dark Elves.
There you go. Yeah, that's more up your alley. But I'm thinking the Dawn Riders as the cavalry unit. I think it looks like they come in units of five, so there's going to be enough space in the roster for more elite cavalry. Maybe we'll get something like the old Dragon Princes. Sure. I would think that more generic heroes are going to be a given. I would think.
Yeah.
I suspect there's also going to be another centerpiece model. I mean, you know, and this is why I say this.
Oh yeah, that army's not done yet.
No,
not even close.
Right. I mean, if you look at the recent new armies that have, you know, come out, they've normally had two or even three big kits. I mean, look at the Idoneth Deepkin. They've had the Eidolon and the Leviathan. The Gloomspite had the Mangler and the Trogboss. Bone Reapers had the Mortark and the Catapult. Maybe a dragon. Maybe the Lumineth will get a dragon. I would love that. That might turn me around a little bit on this army if they would get a freaking dragon. High elves need dragons.
Well, that may be the Tyrion army that we have speculated might be coming after this one, but we don't know yet.
Right, right. And like I said, I know there's more coming down the pike. You know, more generic heroes, probably some type of a military sword fighty guy and a wizard at best. Unlikely to see more than maybe two named characters, I would think. But like I said, I do know there's more coming down the pike. I just would have liked to have seen a little bit more than what we gave
them. It's every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, they're going to be releasing new picks, new things for people to look at. I think the army is going to be a beautiful army, and I think it's going to be this. I also believe that this is going to be a masterclass painter's dream army. Because this army, if you want it to look good, you're going to need to be a good painter.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to make those big puffy pants on Teclis just really pop. I think they're going to look great.
Why did you have to go there?
MC Hammer. All right, so here's the other thing. Overall, I mean, regarding the Lumineth Realm Lords, what I've seen so far, I'm not really that impressed. I accept it. I get it. High elves. Greek, high elves. Got it. Yeah, not that impressed.
Not for me, but I think they'll be a nice army.
Yeah. Randy, anything to close out or a little talk on the Lumineth?
No, I think they'll be fine. You know, they just released their basic troops and the fancier stuff is going to come.
We don't even know what they're going to look like.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible, keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. So moving on, here we are. We're coming to that part of the show. We got the question of the day. And Steve, this is going to round out a little bit more to your comment recently about how you would play Dark Elves. So I'm going to throw this at you. And Randy, you're not off the hook here, man. This question's for you as well. But here goes, Steve. I'm going to throw this at you first.
Go.
So will Malorian's Dark Elves, whatever they're going to be called, but will Malorian's Dark Elves have the hate and impetuousness to rival the logic and the reason of Teclis's Lumineth?
Yes, they will be the Romulans to the High Elves Vulcans.
Great answer. Wow.
And that is exactly what I think. That's exactly what I think they're going for. Because if you look into the history of this new history of the High Elves, they were heading down the same path as the Eidnith Deepkin. And then Teclis said, okay, I'm not going down this road again. We're going to have, and then they had a cultural revolution called the Reinvention. And that's where they actually turned from their impetuousness and they became more like the Vulcans in Star Trek, where they, you know, logic, reason, discipline. Yeah, I think Malekith's army is going to be just the opposite. It's going to be emotion, rage, and hate.
Great nerd tie-in with the Star Trek there, man. That was good. That was crafty.
Yeah, I think that's just where they're going.
Yeah.
And I hope they do.
I like it. So, Randy, here it is. Question of the day right back to you. Will Malorian's Dark Elves have the hate and impetuousness to rival the logic and reason of Teclis's Lumineth?
I believe so. Just like Steve said, like I think they're opposite ends of a coin, you know. You know, the logic is in one direction and rage is in the other. So
yeah, I would hope that would be the case myself, because as I said in the last show, I'm looking for a really good betrayal. You know, I want to see kind of Dark Elves kind of segue maybe away from order a little bit and kind of become the bad guys again. You know, I always appreciated that about them in the older lore. So I would hope so. I would hope
yeah,
so.
I agree.
But good answers, guys. That was, I mean, honestly, those were good. So here it is. Closing thoughts. Steve, I'm throwing this one to you, man. What do you got for us, man? Closing thoughts.
Yeah, I'll try to make it brief here. But one of the things that I noticed this past weekend at our war meet was that almost every single person that was at that war meet had a painted army. And it just made me feel so much more involved in my games, seeing all of these guys and gals there with painted armies. And in the case of like Jessica, gorgeously painted Eidnith Deepkin.
Those deals are incredible. Yeah,
yeah,
she does a great job.
Rob's too. Rob did a great job in his Eidnith. But my point is that, folks, I know that painting is a pain. And believe me, I am the avatar of laziness when it comes to painting. But I have to tell you, you've got to take the time and get your armies painted. It makes the game more enjoyable, not just for you, but it makes it more enjoyable for your opponent as well. Because remember, there's two people on that table. And if one guy has a painted army, that guy's showing effort in the hobby. And if you are having an army that is constantly, you know, spray painted and that's it, what you're saying to that opponent is that I don't care enough about your enjoyment of the game to get my army painted. Now, I'm not saying you have to have your army painted in 2 weeks or something, but I am saying this. Every week, make a commitment to paint one unit and stick with that unit until it's completely and fully painted. Then move on to the next unit. And eventually what you'll find is you'll get to enjoy it. Guys, I'm telling you, years ago, I had a nickname. It was called the Silver Bandit, because every time I played, I would play with metal miniatures and I never painted them because I didn't want to take the time to do it. And since I've been painting, and it was a deserved nickname, now that I'm actually taking the time and I'm painting my armies and I'm making my armies actually look good because I'm taking the time and I'm practicing, it's making the hobby more enjoyable for me. I take pride when I put my Gloom Spite Gits on the table because people have even said, hey, that army looks really nice. You did a nice job on that. And you can hear those words too if you take the time, paint your army, and make sure you always remember that the experience is not just for you, it's also for your opponents who are playing against you.
Yeah, I you know what? Great closing thought, man, and spot on. Spot on. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's another great show in the books. And Randy, welcome back, bud. It's awesome to have you back.
Yep, good to be back, and see you all guys next war meet. So
that's it. That's
absolutely
it. The next war meet, and you know we got LodgeCon coming up on the 8th of February. We're gonna see you there too, right?
Oh yeah, I'm busy painting actually.
Good deal. Yeah. Good deal. Well, that's it. Another great show.
Grimdark Live. I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more, so stay tuned and stay grim. All you dice-chucking, glue-sniffing gamer goons, you're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the Dice Gods bless you and your sweaty palms.